Welcome to Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran. I am your host, Dr. Arasi Maran. In this podcast, we explore the transformative moments that led us to reimagine our lives, our health, and our purpose. Today, I'm absolutely thrilled to be speaking with a very good friend, a mentor, a great educator, and a phenomenal cardiologist, Dr. Ajay Kirtane. He's an interventional cardiologist and a professor at the Columbia University Medical Center in New York. He is not only a leading expert in cardiovascular medicine, but someone who's walked the path of personal transformation when it comes to health and self-care. As physicians, we are completely guilty in not taking care of ourselves and kind of focusing on caring for others and truly forget our own health. And that's a problem. And Dr. Kirtane, very recently in a conference, talked about his own personal journey. And I thought that's going to be a great topic for us to discuss. And hopefully his journey of rebooting his own health serves as a wake-up call for others who are listening to it. And maybe we can get some practical tips from how he implemented itself. With that, Dr. Kirtane, thank you so much for joining me. This is a Saturday, and I truly appreciate you willing to come onto the show today.
First, thanks so much for having me, and super nice of you to even consider it, and even the way you talked about it when you say transformation. I think many people get a little bit, just by definition, skeptical. They say, transformation, it sounds like a big word. I would say journey is the better word, and yeah, I know what you meant, and it was perfect to say it and phrase it that way, but it's a struggle for all of us, and I think it's just a struggle that we don't focus on because we're so distracted with everything else that we do, and this is a universal thing with people in their lives, and it's just a matter of really getting your focus on your own health to be able to try to improve it. And I can say that for the short term, I'm doing all right, but it's been a process. And so happy to talk about it, and hopefully some people can get some inspiration out of it.
Yes, I mean, it's as you correctly said, this is a journey, right? And we really truly need to focus on making the journey more pleasant. And sometimes we just don't focus on the journey, and we are just living each day very reactively instead of planning our day. So let's start at the beginning. You know, you treat patients with heart disease every day. You understand the science of cardiovascular health better than almost anyone, right? So, but you had your own moment, and can you take us to that aha moment, or was it actually a moment which changed? How did it start for you?
Yeah, it's a series of things. And I we're so tuned to cardiovascular disease, but the fundamental problem for everybody, not just physicians or nurse practitioners or anybody in clinical medicine, just everybody in their life, is we generally feel pretty good. There are people obviously struggling and that kind of thing. But for the most part, if you're an optimistic person, you say, I feel pretty good, or this is life, or I may be getting older, that kind of thing. And the challenge with cardiovascular disease prevention in particular is that you have to act well before bad things start to happen for the majority of people. There are definitely people, and you and I both know this, being of Indian descent, that there are people who present with heart attacks or come in with heart attacks in their 20s and 30s, but we always think, that's not going to be me, that they were really unlucky, etc. But we don't recognize that you have to put in the work well before those things occur, if they're going to occur, because if you don't, then you're just playing catch up. So for me, I kind of went through my life. I was pretty, reasonably in okay health. I started running a lot in my 40s. I had lost some weight. I felt active, and I was doing fine. And as you know, we often have conferences, cardiology conferences. So I would get my bloods checked, the lipids, the cholesterol checked at those conferences. And yeah, they were a little high, but I'm Indian, and so I'd adjust my diet a little bit. And I never really saw a doctor. But this is not like just for physicians. I think a lot of regular people in their lives, especially in that time of their life, don't really go see doctors, and they don't think that there's a need to do something. So bottom line is, fast forward a lot. And I think what ended up happening is that it turned out that I actually had a back surgery. So I herniated a disc playing tennis, and it wouldn't get better. It was around the time of the pandemic, and I think most people remember that first summer, everything was shut down. The next summer, everything was going to be wide open, and so I was going to get in shape again. I was going to go back running, and I couldn't do it because of this pain down my leg from my herniated disc. And so At the same time, I was having headaches when I thought I was trying to put on my glasses, my progressive glasses, because unfortunately for those of us late 40s and beyond, you start needing reading glasses of some kind. And so
Yeah,
these
yes,
headaches
mine.
wouldn't go away. Yeah, there you go. So the headaches wouldn't go away. I talked to the ophthalmologist and I said, what's going on? Maybe these are need to be fixed and adjusted. I made adjustments. Headaches wouldn't go away. And she ultimately told me, there's a small proportion of people, like a really small number, who can't get used to progressives. You might be one of those, or you're like everybody else. Now, I think that's a subtle way of saying, you're going to get used to it over time. And she was right. The reason that this was happening is when I went for my preoperative appointment for my back surgery, I was calm. I don't have white coat hypertension. I don't have white coat high blood pressure because I'm a physician. I'm comfortable
Yeah,
in hospitals.
yes.
But my blood pressure was 150 over 110. And that's not just like mildly abnormal, that's pretty
Pretty
abnormal.
abnormal.
And so I said, whoa, this is crazy. I have to treat it. Now, the thing for us is when numbers are out of whack, we can typically act. Many patients don't want to take medicines, and I understand that. And we have to be, like, as physicians, very cognizant of the fact that when I write a prescription, the likelihood a patient's going to fill it is like 2 out of 3 times. That's for the average physician. And then the likelihood that they're going to take that medicine as I've prescribed it is also 2 out of 3 times that they fill it. So you multiply those numbers together, we're talking about 50% adherence to medications. And I don't think physicians or nurse practitioners or others actually confront that fact because they oftentimes don't try to reach things from the side of the patient, understanding that you're going to go home, you're going to get on the internet and Google the medication and see 18 side effects, which don't really sound really good. And you're going to say, well, do I really need to take it? Maybe I should exercise more. Maybe I should do something else. So I had that feeling up front, but when it was this high, I was like, I got to do something, and then maybe I can come off the medicines later. And so I started taking medicines for blood pressure. I exercised more after the back surgery. But unfortunately, my cholesterol actually, if anything, went up a little bit to a level that was not really safe for LDL cholesterol. And I'll divulge my own information. It had gone up to 185. And typically, for people with family histories or otherwise, we want it less than 100. For sure, the bad cholesterol. So then he said, I got, okay, I gotta, this is not going to work with diet and exercise alone. So I started taking a medicine for cholesterol. And so then things got well under control. The blood pressure was controlled, the cholesterol was controlled. But as you get older, we are working out. I did a little bit here and there, and I'm always kind of athletic in terms of what I want to do. But I didn't really do anything about my diet. And ultimately, what ended up happening is I checked my labs, and because my weight had gone up and up and up and up after the surgery, it went down, then it went up, and I knew something was amiss. I checked my labs, and then my hemoglobin A1C, so that's a marker of diabetes,
Diabetes.
it wasn't borderline. It was like straight up in the diabetic range, 6.9. And so for me, again, as a physician, when you see that number and you see the diagnosis, I know what that can do. And I was like, this has got to be fixed. And I didn't want to add now, like a fourth and fifth medication. I didn't want to start Ozempic and all of that. And I essentially just said the same focus like I bring to procedures. When I'm in a procedure, like, you can't distract me. I'm focused. I'm going to do that with my food. Because I knew I was already working out. Maybe I could work out a little bit more. But the real thing is, I just never really, paid much attention
Focused
to the
on.
diet. And we can talk a little bit about the details about later. But bottom line is that when I saw that number, I said, I'm going to fix the diet. And then I got really motivated to really reinvent the diet. And fortunately, the A1C is normal now. I mean, it's sort of in the 5.8, so pre-diabetic range, but much better than it was. I lost, more than 20 pounds. And this was over a period of like 3 months. But it really took some meticulous attention to exactly what I was eating, what I was doing. And by the way, it's not just about preventing later disease. I noticed I started feeling a lot better too when I made the dietary changes I made.
It wasn't one moment. It was like a series of events. We were like, oh, this is not right. Hey, how come this is not right? And you things were happening to you, and you're also noticing things. And that's very difficult. Like, there are so many things you were writing off, right? Oh, this is old age, or this is because of my back, etc. You kind of honed in, and how was that psychological shift? Like, you know, you are looking at the mirror and now it's not Dr. Ajay Kirtane, who is of Indian descent, who's now having medical problems. And if you don't deal with it, something bad is going to happen to you eventually. How was that psychological shift in your head?
You know, it's funny. I think there's some people who get really scared of dying, or they get scared of a heart attack or something like that. That's never been my psyche. I've always sort of been like an upbeat person, optimistic. And no matter what's going to happen, it's going to be that way. And so, for instance, during the back issues, you know, there were times I literally couldn't walk, but I was like, okay, you know, this is horrible. This might be like this the rest of my life. I really hope it's not, but I just have to deal with it. And that's the attitude I took to this. It's really a matter of we're so distracted on other things. How does this, our own health, rise to the level of attention where we actually have to pay attention to it? Because, I mean, there's good studies of humans. We don't do well at multitasking. We kind of are linear, actually, it turns out. But you need something to rise to the level of attention where you take it seriously. And so for me, it was like I just was, I didn't feel great because I was, for instance, I would eat something and an hour later I'd want to take a nap. And I think that's honestly because the sugar was high and I was getting this like big insulin surge, and it's well described that this can happen. So I just didn't feel great that way. My weight was up. I kind of felt a little bloated. But it really took the number and saying, okay, you have a disease. You actually have a problem, to then address it. I think for many people, that's the biggest psychological change. They don't recognize that they actually have a problem or they actually have a disease. But if you confront it and you say, this is what I have. I have diabetes. I also have a family history of diabetes. I need to focus on this. Then it rose to the level of attention where I could make constructive changes to it. It did help, in a sense, that my diet was terrible before I made the changes. If I had been eating well and this happened, and there are many patients like who come to me, and you know this too, they run marathons, they eat really well, and then they still have a heart attack. And they say to me, like, what else could I have done? I typically answer back, well, you know, it's a good thing you did all this because this would have happened 10 years ago otherwise. But for me, at least, I could make those changes because I hadn't been doing them before.
So let's get practical here. You are talking about changes, especially with your diet, and that seemed to, because you were already a person who works out, you said you ran, you play tennis, etc. So, but the dietary piece was the biggest. And, you know, that is what we all preach to our patients, but it's very difficult to follow through, right? So what were the changes you made, and how did that kind of fit in with your really busy lifestyle?
Yeah, look, there's different levels of people. There's some people who are like really hardcore data people. They want to measure everything and get continuous glucometers and do all this kind of stuff. I'm actually not like that. I'm kind of more of a gestalt person. So I get a sense of what's going on and I kind of know what I need to do. So what I did and I focused on primarily was carbohydrates. The reason I did that is because being Indian, South Asian, we just have this tendency. We're basically, one of my friends told me, we're genetically obese. It's we may not be obese necessarily. And in fact, the standard look is it's sort of a skinny person with that's actually inside fat. So we have fat.
Lots of visceral fat.
Visceral fat, and that's the worst kind of fat. But our arms are skinny, like our wrists are tiny. If you measure our BMI, it tends to be okay because we're not that big people, but the BMI scale is like, it's kind of the white person scale, right? It's not like a universal thing. I think many of us are probably a little bit obese, even at BMIs less than 25. So that BMI is a body mass index for those that are not medical. It's a way of measuring your weight and adjusting for your height. Bottom line though, is that, so we're that way. And so we're very sensitive to carbohydrates. The problem is our entire diet is carbohydrates. It's naans, it's parathas, it's rotis, it's rice. It's all this stuff that is just terrible for us. And as a result, we have diabetes at an early age. We get severe diffuse coronary artery disease, heart artery blockages, et cetera. And so I knew that all. In fact, many people don't know if you're South Asian or if you're Indian, your risk of having a subsequent heart attack or a heart attack later is the same risk as somebody who's already had a heart attack. That's how bad it is. And yet we go on doing our stuff. So I said, I'm really going to back off on it. And so the immediate response when I tell people this is like, well, how did you give this up? I mean, how can you give up your naan or your rice or whatever? Like, that's what
Paratha
we
and
do.
everything. Yeah.
You know, like, this is how we eat. Like, we take, we go like this and we eat.
And
You know, and
yes.
so what I did is instead of eating like this, I eat like this with a spoon.
Yes. Yeah.
So I remember vividly, I went to India, and this happened right before I was going to India. And I remember thinking, like, what the heck am I going to eat in India? I just didn't eat the breads or the
Yeah.
rice. I took a spoon. I still ate like the saag paneer. I still ate, I eat non-veg. So I ate chicken, but I didn't have it with the naan.
Yeah.
And what was really interesting is that, first of all, when you do this initially, it induces something called ketosis. So you don't
Ketosis.
feel great for like the first week or so of this happening. You kind of feel a little jittery, but you get used to it really quickly. And what was, I mean, this was transformative in a sense, because what transforms when you do this is you open your mind to things that you couldn't imagine before. So I remember, like, I like Mexican food. Let's talk about a generic Mexican food. You know, we Chipotle. It's
Tacos and
Chipotle is
tortillas.
nicer than Taco Bell, but, like, you know, this
Yes.
is what we used to eat. I would never understand why anybody in their right mind would order a burrito bowl. Like, why would you order a bowl? Just eat the burrito.
Well,
Like, that's how you do it.
yes.
But actually, when I said, okay, I'm not going to eat tortillas and I'm not going to have rice, okay, you have to have a bowl. It's
Yes.
actually really good.
Yep.
I have lettuce, beans, I have some chicken on there. I make it spicy, so there's a
Yeah,
fair amount
of
of
course.
salsa, and the cheese is fine. And it's quite tasty. And so the burrito bowl is now for me. I just don't eat the other stuff. And what's remarkable about food is there's such a wide range of food that's in the world. And there's stuff that I never ate before, or even considered eating before, that now I eat, and I just don't eat the other stuff. So the final thing is, people ask, well, how can you not eat the other stuff? In my mind, I almost feel like I'm partially, like, allergic to it. And the reason I can say that is because after I cut it out, all of a sudden that sleepiness that I had, gone, completely gone. So I know that, like, if I go and eat like four slices of pizza or something, like I might have done
You're going to be in a
before,
food coma
I'm going to be
next.
tired afterwards. I'm not going to
Yes.
feel great. So
Yes.
it's not like I don't eat it anymore. Like, I'll have a slice, but I'll have a lot of salad. And basically, that visualization of this was going to make me feel bad, this is going to make me unhealthy, this is, I weigh myself every day. If I eat all this stuff, my weight's going to go back up again. All of those things, there was such a negative to that I was able to say, I'm just going to choose to eat something different now. And fortunately, there's a lot of choices now, and so I felt pretty good about it.
So, it is so funny, or it's so timely what you're talking about. I'm a pure chocoholic. Like, I have true chocolate addiction. Okay,
Same.
and
Same.
I think it runs. It's genetic, right? I mean, so there's family history of diabetes. There's family history of heart disease also. And then one of my first degree relatives had colon cancer, right about when I turned 40. Okay, and then I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is going to happen. The history is going to repeat itself to me if I don't make changes." And I was like struggling so hard. And then, as a female, the weight and the female mind has a very intricate relationship. And I've been yo-yo dieting all my life. I've tried every possible diet, but it's never sustainable, right? I try it, I lose some weight for a festival or for a function, and then the weight yo-yos back. So, long story short, when I hit 40, I decided I have to make choices now, which are going to reflect not right away, but how I'm going to live my 50s and 60s and 70s, because I did not want to have colon cancer. I did not want to become a diabetic, etc. So I pretty much did exactly what you did. I stopped eating carbohydrates. People were like so shocked. Oh, Arsi, how can you completely ignore a food group? It's not natural, it is not thing. I'm like, I don't know about nature or not, because we were meant to forage and hunt and kill and eat and do a lot of manual work. We are not doing any of that. We are just eating. It's all processed and ultra processed. Oh my God. The keto flu was quite miserable, but thankfully it fell on a weekend. I was able to get past it. And I started getting into a routine, and it came so natural to me, because I honestly like meat. I honestly like a lot of paneer, and I don't mind cauliflowers and mushrooms and stuff like that. And even though I'm South Indian, like proper Chennai person, rice was not my big favorite. Naans were my favorite,
Yeah,
funnily
same.
enough. But I was able to, as you make naans out of cauliflower and things like that. And then, as I'm like going about my work or something, my two of my fellows come to me and said, "What is going on? Are you taking Adderall? Like, why are you so hyper? What is your like doing so many things and you are looking different and something? What's your secret sauce?" I'm like, "Are you for real? Is this really happening?" I mean, then I had to introspect. I was like, "Oh, yes, this is actually happening. You hear about it, right? People talk about mental fog going away and clarity coming up." I have rolled my eyes when I hear this, and I'm sure you've done that too. Oh, this is all woo-woo. But there is something about getting away from processed and highly quickly absorbable carbohydrates, and when you remove that, your body is such a beautiful metabolic machine that it just adapts itself and etc. And honestly, I was even for a person who was always yo-yo dieting, I was able to stay in that for almost 6 years or something. Then, of course, I had to go and do an MBA, which was ridiculously stressful. And then
And
when I
all the
had to,
networking dinners and everything. So,
more than the networking dinners, it was the exams. I had an exam every other month. And I'm too old to take exams. So, but then I had to, but the thing is, you can recalibrate very quickly or something like that. So, but still, the times I struggle even now is being on call, and when I'm in post call days, when I'm sleep deprived, and I'm sure you're going through the same. Do you food prep? How does that part look? How do you stick to it?
Yeah, I do. So basically, one of the things that I do is I have these yogurts that are like more protein based yogurts, like 20 grams of protein in the yogurt. And so I actually have them in my fridge, both home, and I have a fridge, a mini fridge at work. And so that's typically good for like a breakfast thing because there's not a lot of calories, very few carbs, but you get the protein that way. And then I have a variety of snacks like pistachios and even peanuts, which by the way do have carbs in them, but you don't eat that many. You eat just a few and it keeps you going. Things like string cheese, those things I will have around so that if I get a little hungry, I'll just eat a little bit of that. You just have to try to be disciplined about it. I mean, one of the things I was thinking an analogy is we, food is like there's a wide variety of food. There's like a lot of stuff you can have, and nobody really ever like avoids food except if it doesn't taste good. But like if you think about recreation, like I don't do drugs, I don't drink alcohol that much, and so I like stay away from stuff. I just like that's not for me. I mean, it's out there. But it's not for me. And so it's the same situation with food, but nobody ever thinks of it that way. So they don't think that, and it's problematic because everybody has to eat, and some of these things are cheap. So I'm going to confess, I'll be totally honest with you. Like, I love the number one meal at McDonald's. And it's a Big Mac, it tastes great, the fries are great, it like is, and it's cheap. But I just have to think of it as like, that's just not for me. Like, if I do that, then, like, yeah, I'm gonna get the food coma afterwards. And it's interesting. There was one time, and I remember this vividly, there was a hospital had, like, get your health screening done. And I had a clinic that was off-site. It was busy. I was running around. And after the clinic, like, I'm not kidding, I would go to McDonald's. I'm a cardiologist, and this is what I would do. And I had the McDonald's, I had the one, number one meal. And fries. And I came to the health screening. They, first of all, my blood pressure, which was normally at that time, this was like 10 years ago. It was normal. All of a sudden, when I checked my blood pressure, it was like 130 over 90, so elevated, maybe from the salt load or whatever. They checked my lipids and they couldn't even measure a calculated LDL because my triglycerides were
So high.
500 after having
My
eaten this
God.
meal. Like it was like a lipemic specimen. So
Yes,
what this
yes.
means is that there was basically like fat in my blood and they couldn't calculate the cholesterol measurement because of that acute fat. Now the strange thing is this happened like 10 years ago and I didn't change my diet after that point. I was like, ah, it was a one-off or whatever. But this is real and it's easy and cheap and you're able to get it. It tastes good, so people go for it, even though it's literally as bad for you as, I mean, not like hard drugs that are addictive, but over time it's like that. It's
Such
going to
as a
cause a
drug.
major problem for you.
I mean,
So
sugar is
now
a
I
drug.
avoid it. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about, we identify ourselves, right? If I came to you and if you are in dinner and if I say, "Hey, I'm a vegetarian," you would never get tempted by meat. You're a vegetarian, you just go and pick up the vegetarian food. So if you train yourself and and say I don't eat carbohydrates, then you just avoid the bread and avoid the rice and just go for the protein side. It's almost like you have to
Yeah.
change the tape of who you are in your head and who you want to be at the bottom line. I think that's
Correct. For me, in a sense, it was almost easier because I have diabetes than if I didn't have the diagnosis. Like,
True,
once I had
true.
diabetes, I was like, okay, I can't eat the carbohydrates because I have this
Yeah.
disease. I can't eat it.
Yeah.
If you don't have the disease, you're sort of like, well, why do I have to make this adjustment? You're doing it for weight or you're doing it for your ego. You want to look thin or whatever. So I definitely identify with that. I think it's harder for folks that don't have that. But on the other hand, what you don't want to is have the disease when it's preventable. So
Absolutely.
if you make the change and you sort of say, look, I don't want to do this, then perhaps it could be easier, maybe. I don't know.
So, Ajay, your life is as stressful as any, interventional cardiologist. You run trials, you travel a lot. Let's talk about stress management because stress eating or reaching out to sugary foods to comfort yourself at times of stress is a very common coping mechanism. Okay, I don't know whether that's your coping mechanism, but it's a very commonly used coping mechanism. That's why when I had to take exams, candy came back into my life. So, how do you manage stress and how does food and stress go hand in hand for you?
Look, for everybody, this is like a universal thing. It's well described, and there may be rare people that don't like food or they don't respond that way, and maybe they do something different. But this is so common that we see, and so somehow you got to like decouple those things. You have to unlink the "I'm stressed, I need food" thing, and you say, "I'm stressed, I need to do something else." And so for me, fortunately, I have other interests that help to alleviate the stress. So one of them is music. Like I'll go to the basement and play my guitar. That works very effectively. The problem is the kitchen is on the way to the basement. And so you can stop at the kitchen and eat something and then play the guitar, and that doesn't really help anything. So for me, I just try to like go down and do that. Exercise is another one. Problem with exercise, you need to have some food on board, because if you exercise and you have like no food in you, then you basically collapse as you're doing your exercise. You get too fatigued.
Yeah.
So that's where those little other snacks can help. And it's just a portion control issue. Like you have to make yourself, like there's this peanut butter that is really, really good that actually my daughter and her friend got for us. It's made from like a special farm. It's delicious. You can take like, 1 teaspoon of it and then run to do your exercise, and it gives you enough carbohydrates to get through the exercise, et cetera, and things like that. So, but you have to be deliberate and you have to have a plan. Just like you said before, like, do you plan your food and everything? So I have strategies devised to do those things. And as a result, you have to recognize what's happening. Like, I'm stressed. I feel the need to eat. Okay, this is all happening. What am I going to do to not eat in that way? And by the way, for people who are listening, they're probably thinking, some of them, like, wow, I can't, that's crazy. Like, how can you be that militaristic about it? But it's not that. It's just in your mind, if you have a plan set up, it's not militaristic anymore because it's kind of like that's just built in.
Yes.
It takes some time to get to building it in, But when you've built it in, it works. And then the final thing that I don't do enough of but does help is things like meditation. Just breathing exercises, it's remarkable. I've found that they really can calm you down and they can mitigate it because you're just focusing on something else as opposed to the thing that's stressing you out. So that's something I'm trying to explore more. And as you said, part of the journey, that's probably my next phase is to go there a little bit more.
Absolutely. You know, it's almost like what we talk about in our PCIs, in our conferences, planning to fail. Or no, what is that statement we say? Failing to plan is planning to fail. So you
Yes,
just have a, and it doesn't have to be a long thought out. It's just like, okay, I'm just going to have strategies for stress. I'm going to have food, healthy food around me so that I don't get tempted by things which are easily available, and McDonald's is easily available, a cafeteria food easily,
no.
crappy food is easily available. So you just have to have backups, like, and nuts, I feel we completely underutilize nuts. They are such a good power source, quick and easy, and the 100 calorie nut packs, all of that can be extremely, extremely helpful. You know, meditation, I was such a big skeptic. Again, it was another thing I rolled my eyes about. I'm like, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. Then I think I got introduced to the Calm app and I just love it. If I have a long, hard case, I literally lock myself in the toilet and put a 2 minute calm thing because no one will disturb you in the toilet, because sometimes the call room is too far away. I
Oh,
just
it's too
lock
much.
myself in the toilet and just meditate there, or because that's the good thing about meditation. You can do it anywhere and you just be like, I don't care, I'm just gonna. And it's literally, I feel like if my brain is scrambled, it just resets my brain, and I, it's whatever, calm or headspace or whatever you want to do. It's just, I just really, really love it. And you know what? Another thing I use, I don't know whether you've done it, yoga nidra. This is something I was introduced way back in my 10th standard or something, where you do 20 minutes of yoga nidra. It's almost equivalent to getting 3 hours of good sleep. So if my post-call days, when I'm like, yo, so wired, and that's when you want to go and grab, I would do, it's available on YouTube, free of cost, and it's you should try it out. It's actually relaxing and it's really, really interesting to see yourself, oh, actually, I didn't sleep much, but I did yoga nidra, and I'm actually functioning like a normal person.
I'm definitely gonna look at it and figure that out. That's pretty cool. The one thing about it, I just will say as like a public service thing for the nuts is I tend to get the low sodium ones because the one problem with nuts is they taste better when they're salted and then there's a
Of
lot of
course.
salt. Once you go to the low sodium, you actually think the other ones taste too salty. I think the other thing though, RC, is important is I definitely haven't have this figured out. Like I've given you some strategies of what I do, but if you get complacent and think, oh, I know how to deal with stress. Well, something is going to come along that stresses you out more than you know how to deal with. And then you can't
Absolutely.
freak out. You just have to sort of recognize what's happening. And I mean, this happened to me recently. I was like, why am I feeling this so stressed? I have all these things to cope, and yet I'm still feeling stressed. So it's always good to search for other things, and you'll learn newer things. And if that happens, you sort of have to just then implement your strategies again and still analyze. This is not working, so maybe I need to do something else. The final thing I'll mention for me, at least on the food side, is what has been invaluable as a break, if you will, is it's like brakes on the car, is weighing myself every day. Because what happens is that if I know where I'm at and a couple days go by and it starts going up, I am so fearful that it's going to keep going up that the following day, even if I have that craving or even if I have that whatever, I'm like, no, because this is the break. And if I tip, I'm going to really tip. And you have to be careful, right? You don't want to, I don't want to be emphasizing like body image, like bad negative body image behavior. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm just talking about is for healthy purposes, the measurement of weight is a very good barometer, give or take, what you've
Yeah,
drank and
plus or
eaten and
minus
when
or
you've
whatever.
gone to the bathroom, but it's a good barometer.
I mean, and I think, as you said, we should give ourselves grace just because you fall off once. I mean, we all had to learn to walk. We all had to be potty trained, and we had accidents while potty training. So our parents did not give up on us, and we just keep training and training and training. And that's exactly, what you said. You give yourself some space, and but always catch yourself, give yourself a leash maybe, and so that you don't beat yourself up. But watch yourself and
I
come
love your
up.
new form of potty training, though, of meditation. That's like the
Yeah,
full, that's like you're like a realized being. It went from like what a kid does to now you're meditating. It's
I
wonderful.
know. Seriously, I'm telling you, there are so many. I mean, life, man, life is hard, and adulting is hard. Let me not say life is not hard. It's nice to be a teenager in life, I think, but adulting is so hard, and we have to. While I want us to catch ourselves, I think that's the bottom line, and that's hence the title Reboot, that it's okay to fall, just realize, okay, I've fallen, catch yourself and get back up. I think that's the whole thing. So, Ajay, it's a common story amongst healthcare providers. It's a common story about in the story of the 30-year-olds and the 40-year-olds. What could you tell people, like what would who recognize themselves in your own story, but they are overwhelmed, they are scared, they don't want to give up their quick fixes of sugar and pizzas and burgers. What could you tell them which, could help them?
I think there's other things out there. There's many ways to be happy, right? I mean, there's many, and we would never know these things. You pick up new hobbies, and you're like, whoa, I never even considered that would be fun, and it's a lot of fun. And some of the things that maybe previously you thought were great, like going out with your friends till 4 in the morning and drinking or whatever, like you're like, ooh, that I kind of want to go to sleep, and I don't want to do that anymore. So, like anything in life, things evolve, and so can food tastes, etc. I definitely don't deprive myself of like good restaurants and things like that. And what's also important is once you get to a certain steady state, you can still do those things. You just don't have every other meal that way. And for instance, on the food side, like you said, the cafeteria, I would like every time I went to the hospital cafeteria, I would have a slice of pepperoni pizza, a bag of chips, and a Diet Coke. That was my meal. And it wasn't that big. Like it was one slice. I thought that was okay. It was a thick slice, but I thought, whatever. But like that was just not good. And so I'm not saying never eat pizza again. I'm just saying, do it if you do it in moderation, like have like a healthier slice, like get like a more gourmet-ish pizza with like real mozzarella cheese, like that kind of thing. But and don't eat like four slices of it when you have it for dinner. So I think that these things are definitely doable with enough willpower. It's just we have to recognize why we need to do it. And that is the biggest step in my mind.
Yes, finding your why. If you have a good enough why, then you have a better reason to stay with it. That's absolutely true. So, what has been the most surprising outcome of prioritizing your own health? What change you didn't expect but happened to you, and you're like, oh my God, I didn't think this would happen, but this has happened to you.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. For me, honestly, it is by focusing on my, like, let's say, call it physical health, the side effect, which I never could have anticipated in a million years, was actually a greater focus on, like, my spiritual, mental health. And I think, we've talked about this, and I talked about this at that meeting too, is that growing up, in an Indian family with a background in Hinduism or Vedanta, which is a form of Hinduism that kind of recognizes that, every path is the same thing, and not the same thing, but it's sort of for the
Multiple
same goal,
sources.
and there's multiple ways to do it. It's always culturally referenced and that kind of thing. I've always thought that it was important to be spiritual, and these are good concepts, and but I never really like applied myself to it. Things were going well in life, and even when there were some downturns and everything else like that, I had a pretty optimistic mentality. But what's very interesting is that by focusing on the physical thing, somehow, and maybe it's because I'm like 53 and this happens when you're later in your life, but I was sort of like, hey, maybe I should like look into these other things a little bit and read about them and try to be a better person overall, not just on the physical side. So another way for me, stress relief is you can get really annoyed in work and everything like that, but there's no point in getting annoyed for so, at some of these things. So just try to be the best, happiest person you can. I'll give you an example. Working with fellows, July, this is a tough time to work with new fellows, especially because you're used to working with people who you've trained the whole year and they've gotten to a certain level of competency. So I shouldn't get frustrated over it now. And what I told the fellows for the first time, I've never said this in my life, is that during an interventional procedure, the key thing is you cannot lose the position of the
Of the
wire down the
wire.
coronary artery. That's critical. And I told our fellows, I said, just so you know, like for the first month or 2 months, if the wire comes back, that's not your fault. That's my fault. I have never in my life said that to anybody, but it's true because they're
Yes.
just training. They
Yes.
don't
They don't
necessarily know
know.
better. Yes, they're supposed to hold the wire, but I need to watch them like a hawk so the wire doesn't come back. Because frankly, for the patient who's on the table, if the wire
You're, they're
comes
coming
back,
to
it's my
you. Yeah.
fault. They're coming to me. But just that mindset of, I'm not going to get frustrated. I'm just going to be nice and, work very hard to teach. And I'm teaching, I normally teach a lot. I'm teaching more than I've ever taught in my life with this current group. So they're lucky, they're the beneficiaries of it. But this whole thing is all around the same time. What's nice for me, I just feel really lucky that I'm able to do this because I know there's so many people who struggle like in their 50s and
Yeah.
they have these, the midlife crisis, all that stuff happens and they're feeling hard times. I'm not in that situation personally, but there's been a lot of stuff that's happened to me and my family through my life that have been really tough, but this mindset really has been nice for me. And I think it's nice for those around me. My wife certainly knows the difference. I'm thinking my kids probably do too, and my parents as well. So that's great. I mean, it's good for everybody.
That's fantastic. It's almost like you've taken that first layer of the onion out and you're just like rediscovering yourself as a different person. That's
Trying at
fantastic.
least, trying at least.
Trying. I mean, that's all we do. As you said, this is a journey and the target keeps changing and it keeps evolving, of course. So, Ajay, this has been such an inspiring conversation. And I think what resonates most in your message that self-care is truly not selfish. It's truly essential for us to show up for ourselves, our patients, our families. I mean, it's extremely, extremely critical. So, I think the most important message in what you told me about, your own journey is how you started small, you looked yourself in the mirror and you had a big why. Like you didn't want to be a diabetic and that was your big why. And thank you so much for sharing your journey with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, and I hope it was helpful for those out there. And you can definitely do this. There's a lot of help around you, and even if you don't want to do it for yourself, as I said, because the people around me have noticed the difference, that alone is worth it. So it's not selfish only
Fantastic.
for yourself, it's for everybody else too.
Thank you. Thank you. And to all our listeners joining us for another episode, if this conversation resonated with you, please share it with someone who might need to hear it. Remember, it's never too late to reboot your health, your habits, and your life. With that, take care of yourselves. Until next time. Thank you so much for listening. If you found us valuable, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast app. And also, please consider leaving us a rating or a review, as that helps others find the podcast too. I hope you have a great week ahead.